I think that the Reds in 39 going into Yankee Stadium were maybe a little bit odd, but we got nary a hit out of Berger in left field. We got no hits out of Fry at second base. I don't think we got but one hit out of Lombardi in four games. The ball club went into a general hitting slump. I don't think it was the Yankee pitching that did it so much as possibly the awe of getting into this World Series and starting off in 39. Mm-hmm. Now, Derringer, I do remember, in that opening game in Yankee Stadium, pitched a five-hit game, and he should have won that game. But Keller hit a fly ball to right center that Kraft and Goodman, either one could have caught the ball, but they failed to call for it. Neither one called for it, and the ball fell safely. Fry could have gone out and caught, the second baseman could have gone out and caught the ball, but nobody called for it, and it fell safe. Well, it's a thing that can happen, but should never happen. But anyhow, Derringer pitched superbly and lost the ball game, and that more or less set the keynote for the whole damn series.
Mm-hmm.
Then Lombardi got bowled over and knocked out by Keller in a game in Cincinnati, which allowed DiMaggio to run all the way around the bases and score. And that was another tragic episode in the series. So we lost that. And that had a salutary effect on the 1940 World Series, because the team felt when that World Series in 40 came up that, by God, we were not going to be embarrassed a second time. And that was a series that we were going to win come hell or high water.
Mm-hmm.
And the general excellence of play was there. And we beat a really good Detroit team in that 1940 World Series.
Mm-hmm.
So,
in a very, very close series, too.
Yeah, it was a good series and a lot of hitting on both sides. And both Derringer and Walters, I think, won two games, and both of them pitched very well.
Yes.
Now, number eight. If you were allowed to run, as they are today, how many stolen bases could you have had? Well, that's a hypothetical question.
Certainly.
That really, with my mental makeup, I wouldn't be able to answer at all. And the reason that I wouldn't is because the ball games is played today by the individuals that play it and do the running is entirely different than the mental makeup and the individuals who were playing at the time that I played. And to give you some interpretation, the only times that we ran were in those situations where the purpose of the running was to win the ball game.
Right.
Now, today, that is not so. These blacks will run when they're 10 runs behind, and they'll run when they're 10 runs ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's for personal gratification or personal records, which the ball players of my day would not have taken into consideration at all. They just wouldn't have done it. As a matter of fact, they would have been subject to criticism by the other ball players on the club. What are you trying to do? Be a celebrity or something? Your own players would have criticized you.
Mm-hmm. And justifiably.
It would not be justifiable.
Right.
You stole when the purpose of the Stalen was to win the ball game or to put yourself into a scoring position where somebody making a base hit could help you win.
Right.
So it was different. It was different. So I don't know how many stolen bases, but if hell with Cincinnati, you had Walters and Derringer pitching, and Cincinnati it's 110, and I'm on first base, and we've got a two-run lead. Not a hell of a lot of sense in me running and killing myself, because they're not going to get two runs off Walters and two, three, or four innings anyhow. I mean, it just doesn't figure. So you don't steal.
Right.
I'm not trying. I'm just telling you, I'm thinking out loud. I'm not out there trying to get medals. We've got the ball game. We know it, and the opposition knows it. They don't hit Walters anyhow. So you just don't run. Number eight, who was the best player you played with? Well, I played with four ball clubs, and I played with some of the best damn ball players that ever played in the American League.
You sure did. That's a very tough question for you, I'm sure.
Well, you'd have to go through there and look at all these doggone names. I tell you, one darn good ball player in every way, shape, and form. You never hear anybody mention him, and that's Roger Kramer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Roger Kramer could do everything. He was a magnificent fielder. He was a good hitter. He was a good thrower. He was a good base runner. Now, I played with Fox. And Fox stands up there and home runs, runs batted in, total hits, every criteria in the league. Fox is right up there. But Fox was lazy. And Fox was a drunkard. And Fox was a woman chaser. And I love Jimmy. Jimmy's a nice guy and good disposition, but hell on balls and hit against the wall in Boston that I'd get two bases out of, he'd pull up at first, out of breath. And this doesn't help a ball club.
No.
And Frank McCormick was a hell of a ball player.
Yes, sir.
Frank was a good fielder, and he was a great hitter. Was slow afoot. Charlie Gehrig is one of the best ball players I ever played against, but he was just about the perfect ball player. As a good fielder, a smart ball player, great hitter, a good team player. Paul Wehner, hell of a ball player.
Mm-hmm.
Great defensive player, great offensive player, great base runner. Just couldn't get near him during August, though, when his heat came out, the sun came out, he smelled too bad with whiskey.
I understand he used to carry a flask in his pocket. And take,
huh?
I used to understand he used to carry a flask in his pocket and take nips between batters.
No, he never did that.
Didn't? Okay, this is what I was told by somebody.
No, hell, he was too much of a dirt ball player. He was sliding on both sides all the time. He wouldn't be sliding.
Okay.
He's a great ball player.
Yes.
Now, and of course, I played against Rogers Hornsby.
Uh-huh.
Now, Roger was all through when I came up, but he played some for the St. Louis Browns. Ted Williams.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Ted wasn't a good ball player. Ted was just a good hitter. He come right down to it. Ted was sort of a lousy ball player. You won't find many people that'll say that, but that's the truth of the matter. He wasn't a good outfielder. He wasn't a good thrower. But he could wear that ball out.
Yes, sir.
And there ain't any doubt about that. There's no doubt about that at all. Now, say a little about the following. Babe Ruth, the greatest of them all. If you look in the slugging averages in your baseball encyclopedia, and measure his slugging averages with everybody else in there, there isn't anybody else close to him. Nobody.
Not even in the same ballpark with him.
Huh?
Not even in the same ballpark with him.
No, indeed. He was in the 800 percentile two or three times, and there isn't anybody up in there.
Right.
He was in the 700 percentile maybe 6, 7, 8, 9 times, and hell, Hank Aaron wasn't in there once.
Mm-mm.
You look him up. I have. Okay, Lou Gehrig. Just a tremendous fella. Just one of the greatest hustlers and greatest hitters and greatest competitors there ever was. There's a guy I played when he was hurt, played with a broken finger, middle finger on his glove hand. A magnificent ball player. Wes Farrell, no better competitor has ever been in the American League, and he belongs in the Hall of Fame.
Very good.
He has won more ball games than Dizzy Dean. He was a better ball player. Wesley Farrell was put into the outfield when you was short or your outfields were hurt. Wesley'd go in the outfield, play the outfield. Wesley was sent up to the plate to pinch hit. Dean was never sent up to the plate to pinch hit.
Mm-hmm.
That Wesley Farrell, I think, has got more hits as a pinch hitter than any pitcher that's ever in the American League. Now, I'm not certain about that statement, but I think that's true.
I believe it is. I think it's the highest batting average of any pitcher.
Well, anyhow.
But, yeah, he was something.
And if the manager came out of the dugout when he was in trouble, he'd say, get your ass back in the dugout, I'm all right. He didn't measure the number of balls he threw. Whether he'd thrown 120 or 240, he didn't want to come out of there. He wanted to stay there until he'd won the ball game, whether it was 12 innings or 15 innings or 22 innings.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't want to come out of there. Grove was the same way. These guys, they're fighters.
Mm-hmm.
Believe me. You listening to me?
Yes, sir.
Okay, they were fighters. I wish all Americans were like those guys. Anyhow, Charlie Gehringer, he was a great ball player. Just great. A good fielder, a good hitter. Charlie was the kind of guy that continued to put fear in your heart as a defense player when he had two strikes on him, because you knew he was only going to swing once. And when he swung, he was going to hit the ball and he was going to hit it hard.
Uh-huh.
And Jimmy Fox. And Jimmy Fox was a lovable guy. He was easy to get along with, nice fellow to have on the ball club, never any difficulties, strong as a bull. He could take one hand, put around one of my ankles, and one around the other, and lift me right up off the floor. We called him the Beast. He was that strong. And you know he could run in a 100-yard dash in Boston in the latter part of the season. I got about a 5-yard break on him in the 100-yard dash, and he beat me.
No kidding.
$100 prize. And I'd been fussing at him all year for never hustling.
Wow.
Harlan Cliff. There's a guy you never heard about. Harlan, pretty damn good ball player. I don't know how you got his name in here. You never see it in print, but he was a good ball player.
Well, Harlan Clift, I met when I was 12 years old, and he was a coach for the San Francisco Seals.
Yeah.
And I met very few nicer people. Just a marvelous, marvelous man. And I talked with him. I interviewed him a few years ago. In fact, before he passed away, he said that he loved Jimmy Fox to death, but Jimmy Fox just really was a kid. He never grew up.
Yeah.
Harlan Clift, he played in St. Louis, and where a big crowd was 1,500 people, nobody ever saw him play.
Yeah. I respected him. I thought he was a good ball player. Mel Harder, one of the smartest pitchers of his day. Mel Harder had a good fastball, a good curveball, a good sinker ball, and was smart. And he is a good citizen. He's a nice person.
Mm-hmm.
Top flight. Bucky Walters.
Swimming on Mel Harder. Does he belong in the Hall of Fame?
They've been promoting him for the Hall of Fame out there. He lives somewhere near Cleveland.
Yes, sir.
I don't know the exact name of the town.
Chardon.
Wherever.
Yeah.
I know some people. Some man out there wrote me a letter and asked me a year or two ago to write a letter on his behalf, and I looked up his record and wrote a letter on his behalf. And it seemed to me at the time that he deserved consideration. A lot of people in there don't have the record that Mel Harder has.
Right.
Bucky Walters. Bucky Walters was a pretty good third baseman, but he was over at Boston, and when I came over there, Boston got rid of him and sold him to Philadelphia, and Jimmy Wilson made a pitcher out of him. And he became an outstanding pitcher. Clean living fella, quiet, determined, never had much to say, never showed much emotion, just a real efficient workman. Just mowed him down day after day. Nice fella.
Does he belong in the Hall of Fame?
I don't think he pitched long enough, and I don't think he has the... You see, he was a infielder for a while.
Yes, sir.
And I don't think he has collectively, and he stopped short, too. I don't think he had quite enough games under his belt.
Mm-hmm.
But a pretty good batter. In other words, when he was in the ball game, he could help the team by getting some hits himself.
Right.
Ernie Lombardi. The only one guy that was ever born like old Ernie. Big guy, about 6'4", 215, maybe a little bit more, I don't know. One of the greatest hitters that ever stepped up to that plate. hit the ball with three fingers on the end of the bat and way down on the end. Didn't strike out much, but hit the ball hard. Good hitter. The greatest arm of any catcher I ever saw. Now, they talk about Gabby Hartnett being a good thrower. He couldn't compare with Ernie Lombardi. Neither could Bill Dickey. Neither could anybody I ever saw. And not only that, but Ernie Lombardi threw a very light ball. Some catchers throw a ball that when it hits in your glove, you can feel it all the way up to your shoulder.
Right.
Ernie threw a ball with a spin on it, and when it dropped in your glove, it felt like a feather. Not only that, if a man was stealing third and Ernie dropped his arm, all you needed to do is to put your glove down by the base, and there was the ball, light as a feather. And if the man was sliding, the man was out. This guy was, he was great. He's the only man that I've ever seen on wide throws reach out and grab the ball with his bare hand.
Wow.
You know, instead of quickly shifting over and catching the with the glove backhanded, he'd just reach out with his bare hand and grab the ball, and the ball would disappear. His hand was that big.
Wow. Was he as slow as people say?
Was he as what?
Slow.
Or slower.
Really?
we all loved Ernie. Ernie is never out of sorts, good-natured, decent. He had nice, easygoing Italian fellow.
I've never heard anyone say anything bad about him.
No. Nice fellow. Nice fellow. Good to have on the ball club.
I bet.
Archie Vaughn. I never had a word with Archie Vaughn. Archie Vaughn led the league one year. I know that, so he must have been a good hitter.
Yes, sir.
But I never did. You gain impressions about these people. I respected him as a hitter, but I never did much respect him as a shortstop. Now, why I have that impression, I don't know. But anyhow, I never did know him, and never am able to make much of a comment on him.
Seemed to have been evidently a very low-profile individual when he played. This is a comment from other people that, yeah, he was there, and they knew he could hit, but that's about all they knew about him.
Yeah, he just didn't impress you much. Yeah. Well, let's get to Lem.
Okay.
Is there one game or games that stand out in your memory? Well, I remember a game in Boston where I made four errors.
Oh, my goodness.
And the last error I made, I went over behind second base and made a sensational stab with my outstretched gloved hand and turned around, did a sort of a little flip, and then I cut the ball loose and it went over the first baseman's head about 25 rows. I can see that ball right now. It just went up in the stands about 9 miles, and that was the fourth one. And in the inning after that, somebody hit a little pop fly to shortstop, and I caught it. And it was a pretty good crowd out. They all went, hooray! And I'll never forget that ball game, because I always gave a maximum effort. Nobody ever accused me of standing around with my thumb up my hindy. I was usually pretty active and aggressive and hustling. And I said, if the people can be so unkind, this is early on in my years at Boston, I said, I don't think I'll ever pay much attention to fans in a ball stand again, in a ballpark again. I never did. I never thereafter ever let either praise or criticism from the press or the stands bother me either one way or the other.
Well, they're so fickle.
Huh?
They're so fickle.
Yeah, just if it came one way or it came the other, it was all the same. But I remember that. And then I remember a game in Cincinnati when we were playing the Cardinals, and the thing was going down the Cardinals to win. We were win, and they chased us the whole summer long. And John Mize would hit a home run, and I'd come up and hit a double. And John Mize would hit a home run, and I'd come up and hit a double and tie the game up. And I hit five doubles in that ball game. We finally quit the ball game in the 13th inning because both of us had to catch this train going east. They were going to Boston. We were going to New York. And that was a memorable game because I hit those five doubles, and John, I think, hit three home runs or four home runs, and I'm not sure which.
Aren't you the only person to have at least four doubles in a game in both leagues?
That's right. Yeah.
I thought I read that somewhere.
Yeah, that's right. I hit these four doubles off Mel Harder. I hit the four doubles off Mel Harder in Boston.
No kidding.
In 1934, and I hit four doubles. I hit the four doubles in that Cardinal game I'm just talking about against the Cardinals in Cincinnati in 39. Yeah, you're right. Do you still receive fan mail, and do you sign autograph requests? I average, and it amazes me, I average about 6 to 8 pieces of mail a week.
Wow.
And the kids send 3x5 little index cards. They send pictures to sign, and then a lot of times I get requests for pictures because they don't have any, and I buy my pictures from Brace in Chicago, and I always honor these requests and write little notes, and from whomever I get the request for a picture, I send a picture to, and there is no charge for these things. And I always answer the requests and answer the notes.
Well, that is great. That is truly great. Let me ask you, let me say first one thing. When this is printed, your fan mail will pick up for about 2 or 3 weeks. Usually pretty drastically, you know, about maybe 5 or 6 times as much as you're used to getting. I hope that's not a problem.
It doesn't bother. I'm retired.
Okay. Well, that's
I've
good.
I've been retired for 21 years. I've been, 22 years. I retired. I bought a home down here in Naples in January of 1972. And Mom and I have been living down here ever since.
Well, my second question about that, will you send me a picture?
I will indeed.
I'll send you an envelope.
Yes, sir, and you don't need to do that.
Are you
I'm
sure?
I'm well to do.
Okay, well, that's good. The way the horse business is going, I'm not. Okay, well, let me give you my address then. Then we'll get
I've
on
got
the,
it.
Okay.
I've got it. I've got 6356 Ware Road.
Yes, sir. Okay, that's right. That's right. You have it, of course.
Kentucky.
Yeah, I would love to have an autographed picture
of
you. Okay.
Okay.
That's great. Go ahead.
Okay. What was the Jungle Club? Well, when I got to Cincinnati, I didn't get down there until the day before they broke camp. I got down there on a Sunday and played 7 innings against the Boston team. Was it the Boston team? It doesn't make any difference. And the next day, spring training was over, and we hit the road and started to come north. Well, it didn't take me long to determine in my own thing that the ball club was a little dead ass. And after a bit, when I got to know the guys in the infield a little better, I'd say, bounce around on the balls of your feet. Fire that ball. I said, be a jungle cat. And I'd fire that ball. And I had a good arm. There wasn't anybody had a better arm anywhere. And I could hang a clothesline out from third base and make that ball rise going across that infield. I don't mean to be bragging, but I did have a good arm.
Right, well, fact is a fact.
Huh?
A fact is a fact. You're not bragging.
Well, I had a good arm. And I used to fire that ball, and if that pitcher wasn't working, I'd sometimes fire it at him. Anyway, I'd fire that ball around, you know, and I got him to bouncing, and I'd say, be a jungle cat, be a jungle cat. And Fry has these liver spots all over his body. Lonnie Fry, you know,
yes, sir.
His body would be white, and then next to that would be a big a red spot, you know. And so I got to calling him the leopard because he was spotted all over. And then Myers, the shortstop, says, what are you going to call me? And I said, we're going to call you the Jaguar. And he says, who are you? I said, I'm the Tiger. And give him a growl, you know, like that. And I said, fire that ball. And I got these guys fired up. And McCormick at first base, he says, what am I? I said, you're a lead ass. I said, all you want to do is to loaf. I said, you hit. I said, all you care about is hitting. McCormick would hit a ball to the infield, and he'd figure he was out after hitting the ball to infield. He wouldn't run hard all the way to first base. If he'd hit a ball between the infield to the outfield, he wouldn't run hard to first base and take his turn so that he could end up at second if the outfielder would bobble the ball.
Uh-huh.
Do you follow me?
Yes, sir.
And I'd get on his ass. I'd say, go down there and as hard as you can and take your turn. I said, that guy's going to miss that ball out there in that outfield, and you can end up on second base. And so he says, well, if I hustle good, he said, will you take me into the jungle club? I said, we're not going to promise you anything. I said, you get out there and show us something.